This is KPOO San Francisco 89.5. This is Julie Matthews with Healthful Living, and you're listening to our show Reality Sandwich, A Palatable Taste of the Truth. I am a certified nutrition consultant, and I have with me a guest, Jane Hersey. She is the National Director of the Fine Gold Association, and I am very excited to have her on today. She is the author of Why My Child Can't Behave, and I'm really looking forward to talking more about what her organization does and how it can help children. So let me see if I can get her on the line here. Jane, are you there?
Yes, I sure am.
Jane, so good to have you.
Thank you, Julie.
So I, as many of my listeners know, I'm a certified nutrition consultant, and my specialty is autistic spectrum disorders and ADHD, and I have been working with the Fine Gold Diet for a number of years now, and I just think it is such an important thing for people to know, not only people who have children with autism or some diagnosed condition, but also for parents who just feel like, you know, it's just something's not quite right with their child. And so I'm really excited to have you on. I wanted to talk about both the artificial ingredients as well as I wanted to talk some about salicylates for towards the end for people that don't know what they are. But before I get into all of that, maybe you can just start with some basics. I'm curious, before we even get into it, how did you get involved with the Fine Gold Association?
Yes, I got involved, actually, to my great surprise, because my husband used to suffer from horrible migraine headaches. And, you know, at first, when they started, they weren't too bad, and we kind of brushed it off, like, you know, people get headaches, it's a normal thing. You know, we used to think it was normal to get sick once in a while. And as the years went by, they got worse and worse. And then we read a book by Dr. Ben Feingold, Why Your Child is Hyperactive, and my husband began to suspect that maybe certain food additives were setting off the migraines. And when he eliminated several groups of food additives, such as the synthetic dyes, artificial flavors, he found that he was not getting the headaches. And lo and behold, it turned out that the cause of the headaches were a group of food additives. And, of course, my husband had been to many, many doctors, but not a single doctor ever said, gee, I wonder why you're getting headaches. You know, they just grabbed the prescription pad and wrote out a painkiller. And then when we started using it for my husband, we realized that my daughter's very erratic and unpredictable behavior was also being controlled or being affected by the synthetic chemicals in our food. So that got us started, and that was almost 30 years ago now.
Wow.
So it's been a long time, and as we worked with this, we met other parents, and back in those days, in the mid-70s, a network of parents around the country began to form support groups, and these are nonprofit organizations, and what we do is we show people how they can find the food that they enjoy, but in a version without the synthetic chemicals. And the good news is that whether they shop at a natural food store or at a supermarket, they can find most of what they need wherever they normally would shop anyway. And very few people are aware of that.
You're absolutely right. I tell people, this is, to me, out of all the diets that I do, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's very easy to find substitutes. If you can find something with the artificial ingredients, you can find something very similar, often that tastes better without those ingredients.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I do use the word easy because basically I'm a fairly lazy cook, and I don't believe in going to a whole lot of effort. And I have found it so easy to use the program because I just buy the right thing when I'm in the grocery store. And it's you know, it doesn't get much more simple than that. And as the organization has done this work for all of these years now, we have found more and more and more things that people can find in a natural version. Now, they may want to use sugar and sweet foods and snacks, or they may not. Mm-hmm. And we don't make a judgment about that. Mm-hmm. But what we do is we provide them with the options. So it used to be that years ago I would tell people, well, you know what? I can find anything I want except for marshmallows and jelly beans, and I can't say that anymore because now I can find all natural marshmallows and jelly beans.
Right, right.
So anything you want is out there. It's just a matter of who's going to tell you. Who's going to tell you the secrets that the food industry would rather you not know?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to tell you how to go in a supermarket and go down the aisle and know what's okay and know what's not okay? And who's going to tell you that that tantrum your child had could have been due to the neon-colored cereal that he had that morning?
Absolutely. And most people tend to think if it's sold in the store, then it must be safe. And I'm going to come back to that question in a little bit. But let's start with our food additives. What's wrong with food additives for those people that are out there listening?
Right. Well, most of the food additives we really don't concern ourselves with. There are only a small group of them, several categories of them, that we really are very concerned about. Way at the very top of the list of things to stay away from, I would put aspartame there. That's the synthetic sweetener that's been around for a while, which, by the way, originally was developed as a drug for peptic ulcers.
Wow.
I think it's very interesting that millions of people are consuming this stuff. They are actually consuming a drug. And they are under the impression that, well, as you just said, if it's sold, if it's allowed to be sold, it must be okay. But when you dig beneath the surface and find the history of aspartame, it's not okay at all. So that would be number one on my hit list to stay away from. Then the second thing that we eliminate are the bright colors. I just mentioned the neon-colored foods. Artificial food colors are made from petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
Then that just whet your appetite.
Right.
So that's another thing we stay away from, artificial flavors, which can be made from anything, literally anything, and three preservatives. Those are the biggies. Now, a lot of our members are also finding that some things that leave a really bad taste in their mouth are monosodium glutamate and all the things that are disguised in other names but are really MSG. And then more recently, the high fructose corn syrup. Those are not automatically eliminated, but they're not so hot.
Yeah, they really serve no benefit, and they certainly have detriments to people, so might as well find a food without it. And what people don't realize is that one of the reasons that the food industry uses these foods is because they're really inexpensive, so their profit can be higher.
Exactly. And when you talk about risk and benefit, there is a risk-benefit. The risk is ours, and the benefit is the industry.
Exactly. So maybe you can start with some of the colorings. And one of my favorites is the story that you talk about or the explanation that you give about maraschino cherries and the red dye. So I would love if maybe you could explain that to people.
Sure. Good old red number three. Red number three actually is illegal because it's been known for decades to be a cancer-causing agent. And even the Food and Drug Administration was blocked from banning it. It used to be that if a food additive turned out to be damaging, the FDA would take the steps and they would get rid of it. And that's why there are only a couple of food colors that are still left in the food supply. There are only seven that are still allowed. Most of them have been banned. But even the FDA, because of political pressure above, wasn't able to get rid of red number three. Now, the fruit industry likes red number three because it's the only dye left. There's only two red dyes still left. And red number three is the one that they can use to dye the maraschino cherries. They didn't really grow in that color.
No.
To dye the maraschino cherries, and the dye won't rub off on the other fruits when you have it in a fruit cocktail.
Mm.
Now, doesn't that seem like an earth-shaking important reason?
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, so red number three is still in the food. Now, if they got rid of it, and actually it's not allowed in all foods, but it's allowed in some, and if there's any logic to that, I've yet to find it. Now, if the FDA did say that red number three was not allowed in foods, the manufacturer could still use it because it's also used as a pesticide.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, isn't that great? They spray it on manure piles because it kills the maggots. It kills the little flies' eggs.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah. And so that's when you eat that cherry in the fruit cocktail, it's red number three. When you buy a bottle of cherries, it's more likely to be red number 40. But either way, they're both petroleum-based. They're both crude oil. And, you know, you can get along really, really well without them.
Absolutely. What are some symptoms or some signs or some effects that these artificial ingredients might have on people?
Right. Well, you know, Julie, it's interesting because I saw very different effects when my husband and my older daughter ate the same chemical. My husband's effect would be he would become very irritable, kind of jumpy and uptight, and my older daughter would become at times irrational. She might behave very badly, and very often she had characteristics that we hear about in autism. Inability to make eye contact. I couldn't get her to look at me. Her eyes would be darting all over the place. Other families have said that when their children eat these additives, that they walk on their toes or flap their hands, and when they don't eat them, you know, that they behave normally. So I saw a big difference between the effect it had on my husband and my older daughter. Now, with my younger daughter, she would not have much of an effect unless she ate quite a bit of it. And then she would be really irritable and argumentative. So the effect that an individual has from a particular additive can be enormously varied. Some people have a behavioral change, and I don't mean just children. It can affect adults as well. Some people notice that they can't focus, they can't pay attention. And, of course, these things are now being called ADD and ADHD. Other people will have a health effect. It may be an asthmatic attack, or it could be hives, eczema, bedwetting, even ear infections. So it seems that different people have different systems of their body that are more vulnerable. And so we have seen a wide range of different symptoms. But there is one characteristic that I will say is typical of everybody who is reacting to these additives, and that is that they get upset too easily. And if it's a 3-year-old, you know, it might be a tantrum in the middle of the floor. If it's a 33-year-old, it might be a little bit of reckless driving or short temper or whatever. But people just get upset too easily when they have these. Now, those are the people who have the obvious effects, but I honestly don't think that anybody can eat petroleum and have no effect. You know, I mean, unless you're partially bionic. So I think they affect everybody. It's just some people are more vulnerable, and people have different tolerance levels. So some people, you know, a couple M&Ms is all it takes, whereas other people might have to consume a whole lot more.
And I think that's one of the things that's makes it difficult for people to make an association, because they'll say, well, most people eat these foods and they're just fine. Well, yeah, maybe some people it takes a lot more to have an effect, or some other people that they're more sensitive, they just haven't noticed that it's causing an effect.
I totally agree, because part of the way the Feingold program works, and let me emphasize, we all believe, and let's make this as simple as we possibly can, and we all agree that it's much simpler to have one group of food and do shopping for the whole family using the same foods. And besides, once you find out that what you're eating was made from petroleum, who wants to eat it anyway? So we believe in making it very simple, and the whole family eats the food. Now, if Dad is out and he really wants to cheat and he's off at a restaurant somewhere, you know, that's okay. If that's what he wants to do, that's his choice. Or if the teenager wants to pig out at a friend's house, you know, we don't get too worried about that. But usually there's one person in the family who is the target. They're the main, well, really the squeaky wheel. And then usually the rest of the family mostly eats the same food that this person does, as I say, unless they're away from home and they want to have something else. And here's what happens. It's really surprising. Yes, Johnny starts calming down, and the ADD is gone, and the hyperactivity is gone. And everybody's excited because little Johnny, who was so out of control, is doing great. Well, then after a while, people begin to notice that his little sister is also different. Maybe subtle changes, but she's not getting notes from the teacher that she's having trouble paying attention or that she's a little too chatty. And we have seen cases where the siblings jump enormously in their test scores when nobody thought that the child had any problems, and then the family goes on the Feingold program, And the next time they test the children, this little girl has jumped a whole grade level.
Wow.
So it's exciting. It's a wonderful side benefit. But I've never known anybody to have a downside when they go from eating petroleum eating foods.
No, me neither. So you've mentioned flavors, artificial flavors you mentioned can be made from anything. Maybe give people an idea of what these flavors are or what they might be doing also.
Right. Well, you know, first of all, nobody except maybe the company that makes them knows a whole lot about the majority of them. We know a little bit about some of them. But even the government doesn't require the industry to tell them what they're putting in food and calling it artificial flavor.
Wow.
And that to me is just a little bit scary. But we do know, we have gotten some recipes, and these are, if you read the ingredients in a typical artificial flavor, maybe artificial raspberry flavor, you will see enormously long, complicated, unpronounceable words, and a single flavoring might have a dozen or 100 or 1,000. There's no limit to how many different ingredients can be used to make up a particular flavoring. And as far as testing them, well, how? You know, how do you test 1,000 or 100 different chemicals? Some of the ingredients could be from a natural source, and most of them are not. The most notorious of all that we do have some information on is the synthetic vanilla flavoring, which is often found on the label under the word vanillin. It ends with an I-N, but you know, if you look at it really fast, it could fool you. But vanillin can be made from petroleum. It can be made from a variety of things. And one of them is the waste product from paper mills, from pulp mills.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it really is. It's called sulfite liquor, and some brave, curious soul somewhere must have tasted this stuff, because for reasons that I don't understand, this imparts a flavor very similar to vanilla. Now, pure vanilla is quite expensive, but the waste products of a paper mill are incredibly inexpensive. And so there were pulp mills, paper mills, where they actually would build a bottling plant right next to the paper mill so that when the garbage came out of the paper mill, they would bottle it and sell it as imitation vanilla. Now, of course, this was nice for the environment, because previously they had been polluting the streams with it. But now they were polluting people with it. So since the consumer doesn't really have a whole lot of rights, we don't know whether this practice is still going on. It certainly could be. But we do know that if it says artificial, imitation, or vanillin, we just don't buy it. We don't eat it.
One of the big arguments I hear for that artificial ingredient is that scientists say that it's chemically identical to vanilla, and I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on that?
We tackled that question quite a few years ago. One of our advisors was a chemistry professor at Johns Hopkins, and she wrote about it, and she said there is no such thing as something which is absolutely identical. She expressed it much, much better than I'm sure I could. And her explanation is in my book, Why Can't My Child Behave? But from a practical level, as a parent and with thousands of other parents, our answer is, well, when I give my child the chocolate with fake vanilla, this is what happens. And when I give him the chocolate with pure vanilla, he behaves normally.
I guess.
And, yeah, some of us even take it a step further. We've never actually done this, but many parents have said, hey, you know what? I will bring my child over to your house, and I'll leave him with a bag of artificially flavored candies, and I'll come back in 3 days, and you tell me.
I suppose.
Nobody's ever taken us up on the
offer. Yes, that's the best test, I suppose, right?
I tell you, we you know, the thing, Julie, is that the Feingold Association, although we have professionals who advise us, and some of our members are themselves professionals, most of us are your everyday parents, and I don't think it's up to us to understand the science or to do the studies. You know, it's not our responsibility. This is all the work that should have been done by the government and by all of the people whose job it is to watch over our food, and it's not being done.
Let's talk about the artificial preservatives and then the aspartame, and then I have a couple questions about the FDA.
Okay. Oh, good. yes, the artificial, the preservatives, the BHA, BHT, and
yes.
BHQ. Yeah, these go by initials, BHA, BHT, and PBHQ, and they abbreviate them and use initials because the names are very, very long. And this is another interesting thing. They're made from petroleum, just like the dyes are. And they're very, very useful for the industry. I mean, if you take a box of cereal and you spray the liner, which is what usually they do, with one of these petroleum-based preservatives, that thing's going to stay on the shelves for a really long time and not appear to spoil. And the thing is that making and selling and eating immortal food, you know, it's really not a great idea because food is supposed to spoil. So if you take something and you treat it with enough preservatives, it will appear to be natural, you know, indefinitely.
Wow.
And, you know, to take a food and treat it with these chemicals and then ship it across the country in an unrefrigerated truck and have nothing happen to it and have it appear on the other coast looking and tasting the same, I mean, this really isn't the way food is supposed to work. So what we have found with these preservatives is they are used in very tiny amounts, but they are so potent that even parts per million will be a problem for our sensitive members. So when we research brand name foods, we do this. We contact manufacturers, and we ask them detailed questions about the ingredients in their product. And if it checks out okay, then we add it to these books that we publish. We publish a whole bunch of books on what are the acceptable brand name foods for different regions of the country. So we ask about parts per million. And not only that, it gets really even more complicated than that. We can't just say, does your product have BHT in it? We need to ask whether it's in the pan grease, if it's a bread, whether it's in the shortening,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in the packaging materials, whether it's in the vitamin fortification, even whether it's in the natural coloring. I mean, this is the sort of thing that that our members don't need to worry about because we do that behind the scenes. But we know that when you read a label, in some cases, all you're getting is the tip of the iceberg. The cookie that says all natural, 100% pure vegetable shortening, no preservatives, that doesn't necessarily mean that because the FDA only requires that the ingredients added at the last stage of processing, the ingredients that the baker adds, that's all that has to go on the label. The fact that the shortening was already preserved doesn't seem to matter.
Wow.
It doesn't have to be listed.
Wow.
It's complicated.
Yeah. So that brings up a good point for any listeners that are interested in getting involved with a Fine Gold Association. You can go to finegold.org, which is FEINGOLD.org, and they have a great... It's very inexpensive. You can sign up. You can be a member, and they send updates all the time on new products that they find that weren't acceptable, that are or weren't or were and now aren't. And so they're constantly doing all of that work for us so we can be free to not have to worry about all of that.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I hope I'm not making it sound too complicated because what I was describing was the behind-the-scenes, the work that we do. And then all that the member has to do is open up their food list book, and whether they're looking for a macaroni and cheese mix or a frozen waffle or a cookie or ice cream or whatever it is they're looking for, all they have to do is just go down the list and choose the ones that they particularly like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty simple thing. We do all of this, and what we try to do, we have a program package that people can order from us. And what we try to do with this is provide all the things we wish we had 30 years ago when we were starting this out. If I could give an alternative website, it might be easier to remember. We have several names. We're always trying to come up with one that won't be hard to spell the way Feingold's hard to
spell.
Right,
sure.
And that's addddiet.com.
Oh,
addddiet.com.
Perfect.
That's easy to say.
Yes. And... So let's talk a minute here about the aspartame. I'm very interested. You said that that is the biggest on the list, and everybody's always concerned that sugar causes hyperactivity, and so we should avoid sugar because that's the enemy. But then people start substituting these artificial ingredients, and so I am interested in hearing what's wrong with aspartame.
Right. Well, you're absolutely right. Part of the reason why these synthetic sweeteners, not just aspartame, but the other new synthetic sweeteners coming out, part of the reason why they're so attractive to parents is that for years they've heard people say, oh, sugar makes kids hyper, sugar this, sugar that. Now, I'm not going to defend sugar. I believe sugar's total junk.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that I could practice what I preach and never eat it, but I do eat it.
Me too.
But see, when I eat it, I know what I'm eating. I know it's not good for me. But the problem is that sugar has been around for a really long time, and we know from our own experience after 30 years and I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of families, we know that if kids don't overdo it, if they don't eat it on an empty stomach, that they do fine with it. And, you know, just think back 50 years ago when children were growing up, before Ritalin was a household word, before ADHD had been invented, before anybody knew what the word autism was. Think about what children ate. And I was growing up then, and I can tell you, there were candy bars and ice cream and cookies. And, I mean, just ask my dentist. He'll vouch for it. I ate plenty of sugar. But it was different back then because the candy, the chocolate candy was made with real chocolate, not fake vanilla. The cookies weren't fluorescent, bright colored with sprinkles all over them. The food that we ate then was not that much different than what humans have been eating for a really, really long time. There was no skim this. There was no fat-free this or that. I mean, people just ate plain old food.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, we probably should have eaten more vegetables, but we got along really well. And now that so many children are having problems with obesity, with diabetes, with even heart problems and depression and all of these things, everybody's looking for something to magically change their diet drastically and solve everything. Well, you know, if you just eat food, that's a simple thing to try. And usually it makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Is there something specific? You mentioned all the different artificial sweeteners. Now, of course, there's the new Splenda that's the big buzzword, and everybody,
right.
You know, everybody comes into my office saying, well, it's made from real sugar, and I have to explain made from it does not mean it's sugar. It just
That's
means
right.
It was started in that form.
When you rearrange the molecules of something, it doesn't come out the same as it was.
Right, right.
Yeah, just my own personal opinion is anything has got to be better than aspartame, with the exception of neotane, which you may have heard just a little
mm-hmm.
bit about. Neotane is more likely to be hidden in things and not obviously out there. Aspartame is enormously powerful as a sweetener. 200 times as sweet as sugar. Neotane is way more powerful than aspartame. In fact, a teaspoon of neotane is the equivalent of 8,000 teaspoons of sugar.
Wow.
So this stuff, I mean, this is not a good thing because it means that when they put in such a small amount, they don't necessarily have to put it on the label.
Mm.
So this is going to be hidden in there. But aspartame and neotame, but particularly aspartame, since that's what's so widely used, that's the first thing that I would stay away from. Splenda and acesulfame K, which is known as Sunet, I wouldn't use them. I wouldn't use saccharin. I wouldn't use cyclamates. I would just use sugar, and if you want a sugar-free alternative that works very well in drinks, I do use stevia.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great. So sugar and stevia, and by sugar I mean any types of traditional sugars, the brown sugar, the honey, the molasses, the maple syrup, the white granulated, the confectioners. Our members find that most of them do pretty well with this. And what I tell people is ask yourself this. Did Grandma have it in her pantry?
Mm-hmm.
If Grandma had it in her pantry, probably it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, you know, I just have to look back at what I ate as a child. But the food that people ate in the first half of the 20th century, up until about World War II, it was pretty basic food, and most people did very well with it.
Absolutely. If people want more information on aspartame, it has wood alcohol in it. There's a great book by Anne Louise Gittleman called Get the Sugar Out, and it talks all about how actually aspartame can cause sugar cravings, which is kind of the opposite of what people are trying to do when they're having it, and headaches. And, you know, it seems like every time one of these new artificial sweeteners comes out, we don't have enough research on it, so it's fine and great and, you know, the best thing to come along in the last 100 years. And then, we find out 10 or 20 years later that it causes cancer, just like all the other artificial sweeteners. So I would be very skeptical myself of any of those.
And when the company that manufactures it is responsible for testing it, that's a little bit scary. So most people think that these things in our food have been carefully, thoroughly tested. Well, no, actually they are being tested. They're being tested on Americans who are eating them.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you said, Julie, we're going to find out down the line that these are serious problems. And particularly, it's not just what you're eating, but it's the quantity that you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a good argument against what I'm saying is, hey, I had artificially colored lollipops 50 years ago when I was a little kid. Well, that's true, and I had them too, occasionally. I had Easter candy once a year. It was artificially colored and flavored. Halloween candy once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to handle it. And if you gave a child these petroleum-based additives just occasionally, most kids wouldn't really have an obvious problem. But look at what has happened. Look at the cereal bowl. I mean, cereal used to be beige.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, it glows in the dark.
Scary.
With candy all over it and everything. So children are getting, from the time they wake up, the perfumes in the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
the sprays with all these fragrances. By the way, so many of the perfumes, most of them come from petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
The colored toothpaste, the mouthwash, the red disclosure tablets, the pretend orange juice, the dinosaur vitamins that come in purple and pink and green, the fluorescent amoxicillin for the ear infections, the asthma medicine with who knows what it in. I mean, these little kids, everything they put in their mouth is a funny, weird, strange chemical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows what it's doing to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, back when I was growing up, they had the pink penicillin, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
But you're right, not as many different colors as we have today. And kids are almost becoming oblivious to it because it's so around them all the time. And firstly, I don't really understand the enjoyment or the attraction to eating something that's blue, like turquoise blue color. I mean, to me, it seems very strange. I mean, it has nothing to do with anything you would ever, ever find in nature.
Yeah.
So, you know, and
not on this planet.
No. And if it were, yeah, artificial grape flavor, I'm sorry, does not taste at all like grape. I don't know where we came up with the decision that that tasted anything like grape, or artificial cherry does not taste like cherry. So anyway, we've unfortunately created a whole...
Well, I think what has happened is that that parents have been given the impression, you know, and I know your listeners know, that parents have been told that sweet things equals love and affection. I mean,
mm-hmm.
just look at our vocabulary, sugar, honey, sweetheart. Everything having to do with sweet things is related to love and good feelings. And parents are told that their children will love these brightly colored things, et cetera. Well, the children that we help, and I think all children are pretty smart, and once they understand what's going on, they feel the way you do. These dyes are a real turnoff
mm-hmm.
when you know what they are. Now, I love bright colors. I just wouldn't eat them. That's the only
right,
difference.
Right.
But we see it on TV day in and day out, and I think part of it is that people have just kind of gotten acclimated to it. They're accustomed to seeing blue beverages that,
mm-hmm.
you know, have no earthly reason for being blue.
and
unless they understand why this is happening, okay, why are companies using so much of this dye? Well, it's cheap for the company. It makes their product stand out. Do you remember back when the company came out with green ketchup?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean, adding a little food dye is a very inexpensive thing for a company to do. And look at the publicity, the free publicity they got. Wow. This is one way for companies to increase their profits, and this is what business is about. Spend as little as you possibly can on the ingredients and make as much of a profit as you possibly can. So what my colleagues and I have learned is the more heavily something is advertised, and advertising is very expensive, the greater the profit, which means that the consumer is overpaying. The consumer pays for the advertising. So the consumer is paying for this company to put ads out all over the place, and then the consumer pays way too much money for a really inferior product. You know, once you start to kind of catch on to what's going on, it all starts to make a whole lot of sense.
Absolutely. So let's go back to that question I asked at the beginning. If these foods are so bad for us, why are they allowed to be sold in the stores? I mean, isn't the Federal Drug Administration, the Food and Drug Administration, supposed to be watching out for our food? What's going on? What happened?
It is definitely supposed to be doing that. But unfortunately, the FDA is overseen by agencies such as Health and Human Services, which are overseen by political appointees. So the heads of government agencies are appointed by politicians. And politicians, I mean, I'm sympathetic because if I were a politician, I probably would, you know, be very concerned about the fact it takes an enormous amount of money to run for office and to win an office. Who has enormous amounts of money in this country? Well, the richest, of course, are the pharmaceutical companies, and then you've got the tobacco companies, and then you've got these, well, actually, many, many of the food companies are owned by tobacco companies. So it's when you look hard at what we are doing, at the fact that little kids are having all kinds of horrific problems because of the chemicals in their food, when you look very hard at it, it all goes back to one place, and that's money. It's unfortunately, it's all about money. And when a person works for the FDA, I think the FDA is filled with dedicated people who are trying to do the right thing. What happens to somebody who objects? What happens to whistleblowers? Sometimes they're allowed to do their job, but many, many times the whistleblower at the FDA gets punished. They either get fired or they find their office is the janitor's storeroom without the windows. We've had enough scary stories about the fact that, that as many critics are now saying, the FDA is broken.
Yes.
It should work. It really should. And for a long time, it did work quite well. And every so often, in fact, very recently, the FDA, one agency at the FDA, issued warnings that these drugs being used for ADHD are really pretty scary and need to be looked at. But most of the time, these people are working with their hands tied behind their backs. It's not working out. So because the consumer is not being protected, a lot of people have come to the Feingold Association because they know our information is very valid and very helpful.
Absolutely.
But it's a shame. It shouldn't be that way.
I agree with that. So let's talk about my, I put favorite in quotes as obviously not my favorite, but MSG. So this is one of the ones that, you know, we heard about MSG back, you know, what, maybe 10, 15 years ago with the Chinese food. And
absolutely.
There was an uproar.
For many years, yeah.
But it's still around. It's in all sorts of hidden sources. And why does it make a difference? What kind of things do people see when from this ingredient?
Oh, MSG can cause so many different problems. Here's some. Asthma is very common. In fact, the FDA acknowledged years ago that asthma was related to MSG for some people. It's very well known to cause headaches, muscle tightness, numbness, even convulsions. One of my friends passed out in a restaurant when they changed the brand of soy sauce to one that had, it was a Chinese restaurant, to one that had MSG. It can, studies have shown that it can damage the retinal cells, the cells in the eyes, and also depressing growth hormones. But most recently, I just learned not long ago that MSG is directly linked to obesity. And I wasn't aware of that. And in fact, there is a phrase you'll see in the scientific literature called MSG-induced obesity. And the way it works is when a scientist wants to study obesity and they need test animals to study, they'll take brand new, newly born mice and they'll inject them with MSG, and this will produce fat mice. MSG, monosodium glutamate-induced obesity, mm-hmm. that's another name for it. And you know, I mean, I feel sorry for the little mice, but I feel a whole lot sorrier for the kids. Why? Because now MSG is not only found all over the place in a lot of processed foods and in a lot of fast foods, but it is being used in school cafeterias like you would not believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was able to get a hold of the ingredient list for one typical school cafeteria, and in fact, this is a school system that prides itself on being so nutrition conscious. Well, their hamburger has 6 different versions of MSG.
Wow.
2 versions of sugar. In a hamburger, for goodness sake. Their pork barbecued rib patty has 4 different MSGs and 12 different sugars. Now, I'm not, this is not a dessert, you know. This is the main, this is supposed to be an entree. This is supposed to be the meat. And the ingredients for their cheese quesadilla, in addition to having all sorts of flavor enhancers, the ingredients for their cheese quesadilla is almost a page long.
Wow.
And it has things like cheddar-flavored mozzarella cheese substitute.
Mm.
I don't know what that is.
I don't either. It doesn't sound good, though.
No, it doesn't. So what we're finding is not only are children getting it everywhere they turn, but they're also getting a huge dose of it in the school cafeteria. And there are schools in this country, there are schools in England that have gotten rid of all of this junk. They're serving kids good, healthy food, and you know what? They're doing it at a very low cost. Now, most people don't believe that you can have it both ways, but these folks are doing it, and this is part of what we write about. We show people how you can have everything that you want, or you can have the foods that you want, and they're going to taste great, and they're going to cost, in many cases, much less. So the foods that I buy on the Feingold program, many of them are much less expensive than what the average person is paying in the supermarket and doesn't know why. So the argument that the school food has to be cheap, it's just not a valid argument.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And, you know, Julie, I'd like to put in one more comment about MSG. Many, many people figure that if they shop at health food stores, they're going to be able to avoid MSG. And I wish I could say that were true, but a lot of foods sold in health food stores have autolyzed yeast or yeast extract or one of the other names that is MSG cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's sad. Now, you can go to health food stores and find things, particularly the soups and the rice pilafs and the gravies.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the biggies to watch for. But unfortunately, this stuff has crept into health food stores as well.
Yeah, they seem to know that MSG became a politically incorrect word,
right.
So they started creating hydrolyzed vegetable protein and all sorts of other terms.
Well, this school system I described had 26 different names for MSG, and that isn't even all. I mean, there's more than 26. There are over 30 ways to hide MSG in a product. Why do they do it? Well, because if you put in something like MSG, a flavor enhancer, you can put in less real food.
Mm-hmm.
You can cut the cost. That's basically what it is.
So I'm sure that there are some people out there right now going, okay, well, this, I want to do this, but now I'm realizing I don't really have much control because there's all these hidden sources. How can people get started and actually change some of these foods to ones that don't have all of this stuff in them?
Right. Well, you know, it really isn't hard to do. They can check out our website, addddiet.com. There's a lot of information on that. If they wish, they can order the program package we have, and it includes a whole lot of stuff. And one of the things it will include is a book. Now, these books have grown from a couple of pages many, many years ago to the point where they're now about 150, 160 pages of just brand name products that are free of these. And that will give you a lot of information about what's okay, what is out there that does not have the worst of the additives. Now, the MSG issue is pretty sneaky, and if you think you have an unusual sensitivity to it, you can go online and find information about MSG. There's a little bit in my book as well, so that you will know what MSG clones to look for, the hydrolyzed protein, the textured protein, the yeast extract. If you have a particular sensitivity to MSG, it's worth it to spend a little time and kind of bone up on that issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we pretty much, we try to lay it all out. Here are simple recipes. Here are all the brands of this particular food that we have researched and know is okay. Here's where you call if you have questions. We have a wonderful members bulletin board where people help each other out. We have online help, telephone help. We just, you know, we try to fill in wherever there's a need. And if there's another need we're not aware of, then, you know, we'd like to know about that, and we'll do what we can there, too.
Great. For people, I just want to spend a couple minutes here at the end for some of my listeners that have autism and more severe ADHD that are interested in this other category of chemicals or substances. So we're basically talking about a group of substances called phenols, and there is a subgroup of that called salicylates, and those occur in sometimes in naturally occurring or natural fruits and vegetables.
Right.
And
right.
So that's where, you know, I wanted to only talk about it a little because I don't want to overwhelm people, but I know there's people listening, and I just want to kind of throw it out there for people. If the big offenders that I always see in my practice tend to be apples, grapes, those are the two big ones, and then for some people, bananas are a problem, and, and you know, parents, of course, think they're doing a good job giving these foods because they are healthy foods and they've got antioxidants and all sorts of great things. But for a certain subset of children, these are a problem. I know one child who ate, you know, a naturally flavored, you know, gummy bear that had grape juice as a sweetener, and she was so sensitive that it took her 2 hours of, she was just so aggressive. She was in, I think, kindergarten or first grade, you know, really being aggressive with these kids, and all from a little tiny bit of grape juice. So I kind of wanted to point out to some people, some of the signs I see are kids that will only eat these particular fruits, or you'll eat a ton of only drink apple juice, or only those kinds of things, where it becomes very self-selected to just those two fruits. And I didn't know if you had any kind of comments on...
Oh, yes, I sure do. And this is an area of a great deal of confusion. And when I hear from a family that has a really healthy diet and they're still having problems, most of the time it turns out that there's a salicylate sensitivity. And I like to explain it to people by asking them if they've ever heard of people who get hives when they eat strawberries. And I think most people have heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that there's anything wrong with strawberries. It's just that some people don't handle them very well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the approach we take with the natural salicylates. What we do is we show you how to run a simple test. Now, it doesn't mean you'll never again eat a grape. What it means is that at the beginning of the program, first of all, we get rid of the synthetic additives. Who needs petroleum?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that's gone. Nobody misses those things.
Mm-mm.
But we also say, we suggest this. It's not absolutely necessary, but it's a good idea. We will show you how to temporarily remove the most likely offenders, because that's how you get the results so quickly. We'll show you how to do it, but in a way that's not going to drive you crazy. And here's how we do it. There are plenty of fruits that are non-salicylate fruits. So, for example, during a period of a couple of weeks, it doesn't have to last too long, a couple of weeks, instead of apple juice, go to the baby food section of your supermarket and buy some pure pear juice. It tastes very similar to apple juice.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to make an apple pie, I don't cook very much, but anyway, if you're going to make an apple pie, make it the way you would, but instead of apples, use pears.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of oranges, try using pineapple. Pineapple and pears are among the well-tolerated fruits, and there are other ones. Lemons, limes, and grapefruits are among the fruits that are okay. Mango, kiwi, most people do okay with bananas. what we say is focus on the non-salicylate fruits, and most vegetables are acceptable. And here again, what we feel our job is as a support group is to take people almost by the hand and guide them step by step. Here's what you do. You know, give your kid the watermelon. That's fine. You want something special, and the watermelon's getting a little old and tired, put it in a blender and make watermelon popsicles. We find ways around things. If you want to add a little natural color to whatever you're making, maybe you're making lemonade and you want to make it pink, here's where you can buy all natural food colorings. They're out there.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is, we try to find a way around it. And really, I don't think there are many things that we haven't found a way around in 30 years.
Yeah, I would agree.
Right. So it's not that apples are bad or grapes or oranges. It's just that some people don't handle them. And if you take away the additives and for a short while take away the natural salicylates, that's the preferred way to do this. Not everybody does it that way, but it's a good way to do it. Now, in the case of a child who's having behavior problems, it's not unusual to see a change in 3 days to a week, sometimes a little more. My daughter, of course, my daughter's not typical anything, she responded dramatically in 24 hours.
Wow.
That is unusual, but it does happen. So, you know, give it a shot, and we'll help you, and we'll answer your questions, and we'll provide you with the alternatives to whatever it is you're looking for. And, you know, see if it works, see if it helps your family. And the worst thing that will happen is you'll stop eating petroleum. And, you know, if I had to compare the Feingold diet to anything, I would compare it to a gourmet diet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a health food diet because, you know, we have our snacks and our junk and our desserts and everything. But we have the best. You know, if we're going to make chocolate cookies, they're going to be the best chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably going to be real butter, too.
Why waste your time with anything else?
Absolutely. I mean, if I'm going to eat calories, I want to eat really good ones.
Right, right. Me, too. Well, Jane, we are about out of time, and I just want to thank you so much for coming on today. This has been great.
Oh, well, Julie, thank you for inviting me. I love doing this work, and my colleagues, we have colleagues all over the country. We just love watching people's lives get better. It's so exciting.
Thank you. So that was Jane Hersey from the Feingold Association, and you can reach them at addiet.com. Thanks, Jane.
Thank you.
Bye. This is Julie Matthews, Certified Nutrition Consultant. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on KPOO.com. If you have any further questions about that, again, you can reach them at addiet.com. Or if you have any more questions, you can reach me, Julie Matthews, at healthfullivingsf.com. And I'm available to answer your questions or to consult with you. So I wish you the best of luck on this. It has made a huge difference in so many of my clients' lives, and I encourage you to look into it. So thanks so much for listening. This is KPOO San Francisco.